1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, rock. 5, 6, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock, rock. 9, 10, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, rock. We're going to rock around the clock tonight. Put your glad
rock. Hello, this is Dan. I'm with Colton, and we're here to record an episode of the Earn This podcast. How you doing today, Colton?
Doing pretty good.
So Colton and I recorded the very first Earn This podcast together, and now this is, I guess, the first repeat pair of hosts on the podcast so far. So we had a good discussion last time. I think we're going to have a good one this time, too.
Hope so.
The topic for today is iconic music, particularly going through the decades to discuss what's the most iconic music by decade. So I think we're going to start, and I think both Colton and I have some vision of what we mean when we discuss iconic music. And I think we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to go through the decades, and if there's any time left over, there might be a couple other things that we'll talk about at the end. But before we jump right into that, Colton, why don't you tell us about some of the interviews you've done for Earn This? We had a couple of cool ones recently.
Yeah, so if you look under the interviews tab on Earn This, you'll see that we've actually got quite a few building up now. And just within the last week or two, two of mine have gone up that I'm particularly proud of. So one of those was a phone interview that I did with Dave Elkins, lead singer of the band May, out of Virginia, who played for a long time and is now doing a reunion tour, and also frontman of the Schematic Project. And that was audio, so you can stream it just like an ETcast. You can download the file and listen to that one. And then later on in the week, I posted an interview by email with one of the founders of Sound Supply, which is a website that I am so high on. Just today on Facebook, I shared the latest thing that Sound Supply is doing.
So just give us a 10-second description of what Sound Supply is.
Sound Supply curates bundles of albums of music, so they'll find maybe like 10 different albums that they think make a good set together, and they will sell them to you as a group, digitally or sometimes physically, at a steeply discounted rate.
Very cool. Yeah, we got some cool interviews going, and haven't been publishing quite so frequently recently, but I think it has to do with our work schedules and our, you know, our real lives interfering a little bit. But we're still doing this podcast, so let's get to the topic at hand. Iconic music. Iconic music. So what makes music iconic, Colton?
That is a very difficult question. I imagine that we will have different opinions on this, because I think iconic is not a term that has like a clear definition that everyone agrees to. When I come at it, I'm going to sort of give away some of my most iconic songs that are coming up, because I think I need to frame this idea. I think that if you look in music reviews and literature and ask what is the most iconic song of the 1990s, I believe that the answer of people who share their opinions is unanimous. I think that there's a very clear number one, and Dan can disagree later if he wants, but I think the number one most iconic song of the 90s is gonna be Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah, that's by far and away my number one most iconic of the decade.
Okay, and so I use that as sort of my crucible for defining the term iconic, and here's what I mean. That song came out of a movement, and the movement was pretty much underground and got bigger and bigger, and that song represents when it broke through, and the song was part of the movement. It didn't break the rules, but it did become enormously popular with people who didn't know what the movement was. And in that way, it became a cultural touchstone because it was so widely known, while at the same time representing something very specific, maybe something enjoyed mostly by a subculture. In this case, let's say punk rock or whatever you want to call it. Maybe even indie rock. But that's to me what iconic is going to represent. It's when you have something that is a refined version of some subculture, and it produces a piece that gains notoriety in the wide, wide world, and now everyone knows about it. Not necessarily the first big hit, but those are the ideas that I'm looking for in an iconic song.
Okay. I know this is a cliche, something you're not supposed to do, like in groomsmen speeches or whatever. I actually looked up the word iconic in the dictionary, and there were three definitions, and the one, number three was the one that I felt kind of applied pretty well to what my vision of iconic is. And it's, this is also kind of general, and these terms are debatable, but it's widely known and acknowledged, especially for distinctive excellence. So, your criteria was a little bit more specific than my criteria.
But they're along the same lines.
Yeah. So, for me, an iconic song, I actually have the 10 ingredients of an iconic song.
Oh, wow.
And iconic songs don't necessarily hit all 10 of these checkboxes. But, you know, I think the more of these it hits, the more likely it is to be a truly great and iconic song. And obviously, some of these are going to be weighted more heavily than some of the other ones. I'm just going to go through my 10 ingredients of what makes an iconic song. So, number one is that the song is, in its time, very popular, very beloved, and well-recognized by the general public. And notice that I'm not saying that it's critically adored, necessarily.
Right, and it's not necessarily a number one hit on the charts, either.
Right. Exactly, yeah. And my number two is that it's created by a beloved and well-known artist, or at least an artist who eventually is beloved and well-known. It doesn't have to be beloved and well-known at the time, but I feel as if you go through and look at most of the iconic songs, many of them are by the most iconic artists. Not always. I think there are some exceptions and like some groupings. Like, I think the notion of a one-hit wonder is also iconic, and like that's, it kind of subverts that, but I think in general, the more iconic the artist is, the more iconic the song is.
A lot of the time, the song is metonymously standing for some artist's oeuvre.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. My number three is that the song has compelling, well-crafted, earworm-style hooks. It's things that you want to keep hearing, things that get stuck in your head, things that you recognize pretty easily. Number four is that it has a dynamic and or interesting vocal part. I think songs, one thing, if you look, go through the history of pop and rock and roll, particularly since the 1950s, I think you'll find the vast majority of the most beloved and enduring songs have very strong vocal parts. Number five, the song is prominently used in other pop culture. And there's a few songs where this really stands out, and I think this can make a song endure very well. Like, for example, Layla in Goodfellas, I think, has kind of made Layla endure a little bit. And to me, the song that's benefited most, off the top of my head, I'm sure you could come up with another example, is the song Don't Stop Believin'. It was used famously in a, I believe it was South Park, it was some comedy shows.
Family Guy.
Was it Family Guy?
Yeah.
And from there, it shot up to number one on iTunes. And then, of course, it has one of the greatest or most iconic, if you will, pop culture moments of the 20th, you know, the 2000s. And that was the end of The Sopranos. Had the prominent use of Don't Stop Believin'. And I think both of those things kind of just exacerbated, or maybe not exacerbated, because that has a negative implication, but like further exploded how iconic that song was.
Yeah, once you're an icon, you become a touchstone, which means that you get referenced.
Yeah, you become more iconic.
Yeah.
my next thing is lyrics that pair well with the music and are easy and fun to sing along with. And even if they're not necessary, I think there can be a wide variety of tones in iconic music, but just to pull a recent example, the song Some Nights by Fun, I think that is actually a great song, but I think it would be more iconic if the lyrics were better, to use a very, put it bluntly, and I know, I think the lyrics don't connect to the way that the song musically does, and I think, and it'll be a little bit more specific later on about exactly what I mean on what makes it good, but I think you need lyrics that don't need to be fantastic lyrics, and I think like poetry songs are not necessarily iconic, but like it needs to have lyrics that you can sing along with and that, you know, have a certain substance to them.
No throwaways.
Exactly. My number seven is a thing that you emphasized, and that is it's a crystallization of a distinct movement or a distinct time period. that kind of evokes the feeling. My number eight is that it not only does it recall an era, but it also stands on its own. So seven and eight are hand in hand. Seven needs to evoke that era and crystallize that era. Eight is it needs to stand on its own. And I think there's some songs every decade where you listen to that song, you're like, God, that song is so 90s. That song is so 80s. Before you say, man, that's a great song.
Yeah.
And there's some things where you say both, like Don't Stop Believing, you say both. But, you know, I think that you also need to be able to view it outside of it and still enjoy it outside of its trappings of when it was created. My number nine is that the song needs to evoke a distinct and powerful feeling. And this is kind of more specific criticism of Some Nights. Is Some Nights doesn't evoke, I'm not trying to like rail against it, but just to kind of use it as a lens of what can make something iconic or not iconic, it, you know, comparing it to a song that is going to be on one of my lists later, I don't even want to spoil it because it might be, I can't remember if it's number one or number two from that decade, but a song needs to invoke drama or romance or emotion. And if it doesn't invoke one of those things, it's less likely to be iconic. And the last thing is, I have listened to a whole lot of music, and particularly pop music from the 50s to now. And I find that the songs that that people keep listening to generally have fairly understated production or a rock-oriented instrumentation or production. I think the songs that are the most glossy tend to age and tend to fall into that trap of it sounds too much like its era, because some production trends change, but there are some things that have remained constant since the 50s, and I think fairly understated production and rock-oriented instrumentation makes it sound a little bit more timeless.
As well as good hooks and solid vocal parts.
Exactly, yeah. So those are kind of my 10 pieces that, you know, if I'm listening to a song, and the more of these it hits, the more likely, in general, I think there's a higher correlation that it's going to be a song that I consider iconic.
It's a hell of a recipe.
Thank you. as you can see, I've thought about this a little bit, and the reason is, and this is a spoiler alert, probably like 4 or 5 months down the road, I've actually been working on a project since last year where I rank the top, and the number keeps growing. It was initially 2, now it's 5, it may end up being 10, most iconic songs by year with an accompanying article. I started with 1963, but I think I might go back to start around 1955 or so. Before then, it gets kind of tough, but even, yeah. So, I have thought a lot about this, so that is why I have a 10-step recipe, or a 10-part recipe. So what do you think of my dad? Are there anything there that you want to dispute?
No, actually, all of those sound like things that I would agree make a song more iconic. The only things I'll dispute, and I'm just going to get this off my chest, and then no further comment, get it off the table. In my personal opinion, Some Nights is Fun's best song, and in my personal opinion, I hate Don't Stop Believin', but
oh,
that's
really?
For another time.
Wow. Okay, well, I think I might even agree with you that Some Nights is Fun's best song. I mean, it's certainly one of their two most iconic songs.
One of the two songs of theirs that people know.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's another way to say it, yeah.
And the other one won a Grammy, so.
There you go, yeah. Okay. All right, so do you want to get started with the decades?
Yeah. How do you want to do this? Do you want to back and forth 5, back and forth 4, or do you just want to count down and then I count down?
How about, that's a good question. Why don't we just do the back and forth? So, start with, do you have it ordered as a top 5?
I do. So we've each got our top 5 songs from 5 down to 1 for each decade, 50s, 60s, and so on. We started at the 50s because, honestly, name 10 songs from the 40s, and you had to stop somewhere. And I believe we agreed that if a song was made in 1970, it is a 70s song, not a 60s song.
Okay, there was one song that was very close to the cutoff that I had trouble with, and I ended up doing it on its release date, not its most prominent popularity date.
Okay.
So I think we're on the same page on that one.
Sounds good.
Okay, so my number five for the 50s is That'll Be the Day by Buddy Holly. Is that in your top five?
I considered a Buddy Holly song, and it really could have been any one.
Yeah,
and it just fell off as I was narrowing down.
Yeah, so I think it hits a lot of the check marks. And one thing that I could have put as number 11 for being an iconic song is it's associated with this character, like their demise or their death or something like that. I mean, that you even have that with Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Definitely.
And you'll have that with That'll Be the Day. You have that with a song that almost made my 60s one but didn't, and that is Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding. And there's probably a dozen others you could come up with where that song is remembered. Probably Hallelujah by Jeff Buckley, to a certain extent, is like remembered because it came out shortly before that person died. And it kind of has like a deathly glow about it or something like that. But anyways, I think it's a fantastic song. It's like just a good summary of what makes 50s pop and rock great.
No doubt. My number five, this is one of my few that are going to be really contentious, really pretty loose picks.
Okay.
But my number five for the 50s was Witch Doctor by David Seville. And the reason that I pulled this was, one, this is the first Chipmunks single, and everyone to this day knows who the Chipmunks are. And two, the Chipmunks' voices on the track, and in general, were made by David Seville recording himself and speeding it up. And this is in 1958. This is such an early example of experimenting, playing with sounds and with physical sounds and things, that I decided to throw it on.
See, that specific track would not fall under my criteria for being, or Webster's definition of being widely known, because I don't know how many people know that specific Chipmunk song.
That's fair. That's
but
fair.
But I certainly sound, I mean, everyone does know who the Chipmunks are, and sounds like cool use of technology at the time, too.
Yeah.
My number four is, in my opinion, quite possibly the best, objectively, song of the decade. The song that if I had to listen to the rest of my life, just one song from the decade, I'd probably choose this one. And it's Johnny B. Goode by Chuck Berry.
Yeah, that is further down my list.
It's a it was, by some arguments, one of the births of rock and roll was Johnny B. Goode. I mean, you'll talk more about it too, but it's just like it has one of the best guitar intros of any song ever. I mean, just everything about it is fantastic. So
yeah, my number four is The Book of Love, performed by the Monotones. And this is one where I had a couple different songs that I could have picked. But basically, I'm looking for an icon from the doo-wop sound.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say...
So this could have been Blue Moon, or this could have been Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, and I just went with Book of Love.
Okay, that's reasonable. That's a good one. I do love doo-wop, by the way.
Yeah.
Doo-wop's good stuff. My number three is not the last song by this artist in my top three. It's Hound Dog by Elvis.
Yeah.
That's another song that you'll see near the top of greatest songs ever lists, and it's to me, when I think of 50s rock and roll, that's the first song I think of. And I think people in time have liked another one of his songs more, and that's my number one on this list. But I think that is, I mean, I could even be talked into this being the number one, because to me it most represents 50s rock.
I'm surprised how much we agree. Hound Dog is also lower on my list. So between that and Johnny B. Goode, you can wait in suspense, because my number three is basically my Sinatra pick. And I went with Love and Marriage, because I think that's his most popular song from the 50s.
I did not... You know what? When I put my list together, I don't think a single Sinatra ended up on any of my lists, but... There's definitely room for Sinatra.
Yeah.
Love and Marriage. So I guess My Way didn't come out in the 50s?
My Way was later. My Way was 60s or 70s.
Okay.
And Love and Marriage was, of course, also the theme song
The Way
for
You Look Tonight? Was
Married
that...
with Children. I'm not sure The Way You Look Tonight. I can't remember. But when I look down the list of singles by year, this is what I pulled out. So
okay.
Hopefully it's the best known.
Sorry, was that your number three?
That was my three.
So I'm on two.
Yeah.
My number two is the moment that I think of as... This is the song I think of as the first rock and roll song. So what do you know? Can you guess what it is?
If you had posed that question to me 5 minutes ago, I would have said Johnny B. Goode.
Okay. Rock Around the Clock by Bill Haley in the Comets.
Okay, and that's probably like 5 years earlier than Johnny B. Goode.
I actually don't know. There's another one that... That and Earth Angel are the two that I've seen cited the most as like the the first rock song, but there's definitely, it's obviously not widely agreed upon. Some people say Elvis's Mystery Train, which I think was his first, one of his first Sun tracks. That's a really fertile and interesting dynamic period in rock history.
I think it would be very difficult to dispute Rock Around the Clock. That's iconic. My number two, as previously mentioned, it's Elvis Presley's Hound Dog. And, you know, if you're going to pick an Elvis song, obviously Dan has one more coming. And Hound Dog is the one that I went for, just as such a rock and roll spirit in the song. And I think it was actually a cover.
Yeah.
He didn't even perform it first, but when he performed it, it suddenly became rock and roll.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's... there are some of those songs from that era that critics love that I don't get too into, like Mystery Train as an example. Like, some of those earlier recordings, I can leave or take. Like, I can respect their significance, but they don't quite do it for me. They don't capture it quite as well as, like, Hound Dog does. But Hound Dog, man, that is just... That's a killer track. And it's one that I've been, you know, listening to my whole life, and I'm not even close to tired of it. It's a great song, so.
All right, so what's your number one?
My number one is, I think, I don't know anyone who dislikes this song, and I think most people say, oh, yeah, I love it. I mean, like, this is one of my favorite Elvis songs. It's Jailhouse Rock.
Jailhouse Rock.
And it also has the movie element with Elvis, which is another big thing, like, kind of this whole rock star becoming, like, a celebrity thing into it, too. But I think it's just one of those songs that, like, if you're talking widely known and acknowledged for distinctive excellence, that's Jailhouse Rock to me. I mean, I think everyone knows and loves Jailhouse Rock. And along with some of the other ones I mentioned, to me, this is one of the songs that's just the essence of upbeat rock and roll.
Absolutely. My number one, of course, Johnny B. Goode, Chuck Berry. It's just, it is blues. It is blues. I think it's 12-bar blues made into a song that everyone in America knew and everyone in America danced to, and to this day.
I still dance to it. I mean, yeah.
It became the focus of a great joke in Back to the Future. That's
good point. Back on my prominent use in pop culture thing there.
Exactly.
Oh,
okay.
So
I guess I'll start the 60s.
Yes.
All right, so next...
Wait, hold on. Before we jump into that. Well, we could talk about this more as we go. Obviously, of the ones we've talked about, the 50s are the best decades so far. So I want to go one level higher and think about which decades have the most iconic music.
Okay.
But let's keep going. So 60s, you go first, number five.
All right, so my number five from the 60s, and I guess I'll probably start to do this a lot, you hear me say something like this, but this is my Beach Boys pick.
Okay.
And so it could have been several things. I said Good Vibrations. I think that is the Beach Boys song that... I mean, as much as the Beach Boys are just a party surf rock band, like, Good Vibrations was when they were really branching out. It's off Pet Sounds, right?
No. That was going to be on their, what was it, Sunset, Sunrise, whatever. The one that was, like, the Mythical album that was never released. It was going to be on that one.
Okay, but it actually came out at some point.
Yo, yeah, no, it came out as a single.
Yeah.
But there was, oh, God, now how come I can't... Smile, that's what it is.
Oh, right, Smile.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Brian Wilson's baby.
So it was going to come out. It never came out. And the Good Vibrations was going to be the cornerstone of that album. They made that first. They didn't quite finish all the other songs, but they released Good Vibrations. The rest is history, as they say. I mean, that didn't make my top five. I thought about it for my top five, and I would say it ranks as one of my personal top 50 favorite songs. I adore Good Vibrations. It just sounds so good. Great song. Good choice.
Yeah.
My number five is my quote-unquote Bob Dylan song. There's two obvious ones, or two or maybe three obvious ones that you could go for. I went with Blowin' in the Wind because it has the protest element. It has that part of the 60s in it, and I think that's necessary. And
I think that's why he was an icon.
Yeah, I think that's what made him an icon. If you go back to your thing where that was a thing that crystallized or like brought something to prominence, that you can't do better than that with Blowin' in the Wind. I mean, just so simple, so perfect a song, and it was before you could hate Bob Dylan. And you could definitely hate Bob Dylan later in his career, so.
All right, my number four for the 1960s, Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze.
Ooh.
And if you wanted to label it, this is my Woodstock pick. But I think that this is a completely drugged out song. it could be the druggy pick for the 1960s, which is something you need. That is iconic of that era. And it's a song that not everyone knows exactly how it goes, but when the guitar line kicks in, anyone today is going to be like, huh, I think I know that song.
That one's Purple Haze, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, that song. And I think you're right that that's actually, I think, a good choice, and I kind of wish I had included that in my five. I think you're right that it does capture that. It captures, like, the whole Woodstock psychedelica thing.
I almost went with Jefferson Airplane, White Rabbit, but I decided Purple Haze was better.
Purple Haze is a better pick. Nothing against White Rabbit, but Purple Haze is the king of the psychedelic music for me. So, yeah. My number four is Respect by Aretha. There's a lot of things in this song. I mean, it's a good song to listen to. It has that all-time great vocal part. It also has the sexual awakening in it for me. It has the lyrics are not entirely overtly sexual, which is one of the reasons I think it's endured. It's PG, so you can play it in cartoons and, like, movies and things, but there's very much a sexual element in there. Like,
it's got Aretha, this bra-burning bravado.
Yeah, and, like, there's a couple of lyrics that people like to interpret as, like, Aretha saying, like, I'm in control of my sexuality, too. And, like, it's like, it in that, there's sexual awakening, there's the increase in feminism, there's the, I mean, she was a big black soul singer. There's that racial element too. There's a lot going on, and of course, it's just a fantastic song that everyone knows. I mean, I could even put it higher on that list, but I mean, I think it had to be on there for me.
Definitely. For me, 1960s, and I'm sure for you as well, this is true. 1960s is when Phil Spector peaked, and so for that reason, my number three is "Be My Baby" by the Ronettes.
"Be My Baby" is one of my 5 or 10 favorite songs ever. I love, adore "Be My Baby." I wrote about it on Earn This as, I think I selected it as my runner. No, I didn't select it as my runner-up single ever, but I think it's one of the most pure, great pop songs ever in terms of sound and structure, and just, you can listen to it forever. I selected two songs that I like more than some of my top five, but that, to me, weren't quite as iconic. And "Be My Baby" was one of those, so I can respect that choice.
All right.
My number three is my Beatles pick. It is "Hey Jude." "Hey Jude," everyone knows "Hey Jude." It's most people love "Hey Jude," and if you don't love it, you don't love it because it's been played too much. I mean, that's what it is with it. That's a lot of iconic songs are kind of that way, but "Hey Jude" is just. And to me, "Hey Jude" almost stands out, as with a lot of the Beatles. It doesn't make me think of the era. It just makes me think of great music. And, I mean, that's why, I had to have "Hey Jude" on there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. My number two, in lieu of a Bob Dylan song, I have Creedence Clearwater Revival, "Proud Mary."
Ah. Wow. "Proud Mary" at number two, is that what you said?
That's where I put it. And
That's a bold claim.
Maybe this song is not as thoroughly known as I think it is, but this is a song that I've heard a million times just from playing in marching band and from watching football games and hearing it in the stands. And this is a song that I think everybody knows, and I think it's, I don't know, people almost treat it like it's an old American folk song, but it was actually a protest song of the 1960s. Made by a rock band and all over the radio, and I don't know, it impresses me.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's my favorite version of Proud Mary from the 60s. I like the Turners. I think that one was in the 60s too. Ike and Tina. I don't know if it was in the 60s or not, but
Creedence wrote the song.
Yeah, they did it originally.
And their version was 1969.
Okay, so maybe it was the 70s that, but no, that's interesting. I mean, so is there something, I don't dispute that it's a great song. Is there something, I mean, we're talking about one of the greatest decades of music ever. You're calling it the number two most iconic song. Is there something that really kind of sets it above in terms of its significance, or is it just that you think it's a great song?
No, I think it's on my list for the same reason that you had Dylan on yours. And I think that when we're talking about the top five, you know, maybe I should have had it two or three places lower. So if that's off, perhaps. But I definitely think that...
The protest element?
I think that a protest song deserves to be in top five consideration.
But I think, I don't initially think of that as a protest song, but you're kind of... I mean, it is a protest song, so that's fair, yeah. My number two is my other Beatles song. It's I Want to Hold Your Hand. To me, that's the... I mean, what can be said about this song that hasn't been said 100 times over? What can be said about any Beatles song that hasn't been said 100 times over?
This is one of the Beatles songs that I have heard in German. Because
oh, first, I have too, yeah.
Back in the day when they were playing around Hamburg, they knew some of their songs in German to cater to the local crowd.
Yeah, the Beatles recorded 2 singles in German, if I'm not mistaken. They recorded Hold Your Hand and I think She Loves You.
She Loves You is the other one. P.S. She Loves You, my number one most iconic song of the 1960s. So I'll just transition into that. Obviously, you have 2 Beatles songs there. I have one. I pick She Loves You because, and I think I Want to Hold Your Hand is neck and neck with it in terms of being the breakout song when they came across the pond.
Yeah.
The thing that revealed them to America.
And this whole kind of, it was a transformation of rock and roll. It wasn't just, it was the beginning of a transformation for rock and roll.
It was the Liverpool sound.
And because the Beatles ended up so drastically, I mean, we could do 5 podcasts on the way that the Beatles recorded, changing recording music and pop and rock music. But because they did change so much and because they kind of reframed pop music so much, that breakthrough feels like the catalyst of all, you know, breakthroughs. And I think Hold Your Hand because of the TV thing, because of what's his name?
Ed Sullivan.
Sullivan. Yeah, that's why that one trumps it for me. They're both, in terms of their chart performance, they're both right there. In terms of like which one people love more at the time, they're both right there. But the TV thing kind of, you know, continuing the evolution of the rock star as the celebrity. That's why I have Hold Your Hand above that.
Yeah, I would consent to that. I think you have it right.
My number one is my other Beatles song. It's Yesterday.
Oh, man.
So maybe I went a little overboard on the Beatles. 60s was such a fertile time for rock and roll that it does seem a little bit overboard. But like when I think of great songs from the 60s and like the songs that like are classics, the songs that hit all the right notes, the songs that defined their style and like just everyone knows and are all over the place, those are the first three I think of. I mean, that's what it is for me, so...
It's staggering how many number one hits and how many utterly memorable songs the Beatles have produced that are deep within our collective consciousness. They released that album, Within Our Lifetimes, One, which was just, what, like 40 songs of theirs that had hit number one?
It was, I think, 27 or something
27.
Like that.
27, okay, sure.
And, by the way, like that was only, like, half of their... Like, they had to be selective about the songs they included. Like, their criteria had to be rigorous. And they also managed to not include a single song from, in my opinion, their best album, Rubber Soul,
there.
So, I mean, just, like, this jam-packed 27 number one hit songs is still only a tiny cross-section of their... I mean, not a tiny cross-section, but, like, a very incomplete cross-section of their greatness.
So. I was very tempted to put multiple Beatles songs on here, because I think when you think of 60s music, that's what comes to mind first.
Yeah, and they were so dominant. I mean, I'm going to write about them in my top 100 a little bit later down the line, but they were unprecedented, and no one's done it since in terms of being how huge they were, how adored they were, and how influential they were. I mean, it hasn't happened, and it's hard to see it happening again.
And considering
how zeitgeisty they were.
Considering not just how zeitgeisty the Beatles were, but also that there was a lot else going on in music at the same time, is it fair to say that the 1960s are trumping the 1950s?
By far for me, yeah. I told you I had 2 songs that I like more than the iconic songs, but and I wanted to mention, but I didn't feel belonged in the top five. One was Be My Baby, and the other one is, I bet you didn't know this came out in the 60s, is I Want You Back by the Jackson 5.
Oh my gosh.
I believe it came out in late 69. I could be wrong. Double check on that. But I
How
think it came
old
out in late
was
69.
Michael?
He was like, well, I don't know, would he have been 8, 7 or something like that?
Probably.
Who knows? But yeah, I love that song.
That's, all right.
That song, I put it on once, and my friend said, the song is an eargasm. And so whenever I hear that song, I'm like, he's right, though, it is. It's like, it's bliss. It's so good.
It is beautiful.
Okay. 70s.
All right, you're up to bat.
All right. Although, well, we can talk about comparing decades. I'm going to spill it now. 60s or the 70s are the best for me. And I went into this thinking that the 60s was the best for singles and the 70s was the best for music overall. But I might even have to revise that now and just say 70s was the best period. I mean, to me, there was so much good stuff in the 70s, so much happening. Maybe not quite as dramatically changing as the 60s in terms of like the way that people made music and listened to music and how we thought about musicians. I think the 60s was bigger than that, bigger than the 70s in that way. But the 70s, for just the amount of good music and how the peak of that music, is the best for me. And so all five of these, there was tough ones to cut, and all five of these, I would entertain a case for number one. So number five, "Staying Alive" by the Bee Gees. It has the movie thing. It is the disco song. It is infinitely listenable and fantastic. So
I think that Saturday Night Fever would also be a contender. "Staying Alive" is on my top five from this decade.
Oh yeah, okay.
So well done. I agree with you that this decade is sort of overloaded, and if anything, it makes me less confident in my picks. But
I agree. Yeah.
My number five for the 1970s, Queen's "Bohemian Rhapsody."
Mm.
And I will call it iconic because everyone knows that song. Everyone knows that song. It's been parodied a million times. No one will ever make anything so mind-crushingly beautiful and so well put together. It's just astounding, the things that they did.
When I said one of my ingredients was it has to evoke emotion, romance, or drama, the first draft of that is it has to evoke emotion or romance. And I was like, well, what Bohemian Rhapsody does is different from that. It evokes drama. It's like a level above the other ones. So you will see, I think Bohemian Rhapsody is definitely an iconic song. So my number four is my other Beatles pick. It is "Let It Be" by the Beatles. I mean, to me, the quadrifecta of "Yesterday," "I Want to Hold Your Hand," "Hey Jude," and "Let It Be," they're not necessarily the Beatles' best songs, but they're like, they hit all of the what the Beatles were best at, and like their best known ones. Like, those are their stone cold classics in my book. And as I consider them the most iconic band and like the most influential band on like how music went, I mean, everybody knows and loves "Let It Be." Am I wrong in that? I think
no. I agree. I think that you have picked four Beatles songs that are, I think that three of them exemplify incredibly good songs, and I think that the fourth is "I Want to Hold Your Hand," and it is perhaps not as well crafted of a song, but I think that it's the sort of song that I was focusing on when I thought about the Beatles in the 60s, because that's where they started. That's how they built their fan base, was stuff like that. And then it was later that they were able to produce an entirely different thing, something beyond the scope of what music had seen yet. Okay, where's that leave us? I'm on number four.
Right.
All right. Number four from the 70s, Lynyrd Skynyrd, "Sweet Home Alabama."
Ooh, can't really dispute that one. The only reason I can dispute that one is I think the 70s are so loaded that, you know, I don't even know if that would be my number one most iconic Skynyrd song.
Oh, yeah?
"Freebird."
Yeah, okay, I know what you mean, but how many people have actually heard "Freebird"? Like, in its entirety, or even at all. People just know that you're supposed to yell it at concerts.
That's true.
But "Sweet Home Alabama,"
yeah, okay,
just 5 years ago, was a Kid Rock song.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, in terms of songs you're actually listened to, rather than being iconic for the sake of being that song, I can respect that.
I felt almost compelled to put some Southern Rock on there.
That's
so
fair.
That's where that came from.
Well, on the note of songs that you're supposed to shout out at concerts, my number three is "Stairway to Heaven."
Ah.
That's 70s, right?
That is certainly 1971.
Okay, good memory, because all of a sudden I was doubting myself. Was it 69? But no, it was 70s.
No, definitely a 70s song.
I mean, if not for numbers one and two, this could have been the most iconic. I mean, maybe it is the most iconic of the decade, but it's just like the classic rock song. Like, when you think of classic guitar-driven hard rock, that's, I mean, Stairway to Heaven with guitar solos, with high-energy instrumentals and, like, somewhat mystical lyrics, like, Stairway to Heaven is the prototype of that type of song. Like, there are entire subgenres have sprung up from Stairway to Heaven. And, I mean, it, whenever you see a countdown of the greatest rock songs ever, if Stairway's not number one, there's some discussion of why Stairway's not number one. I mean, that's my impression. Maybe that's a little exaggeration, but I'm not saying it's the greatest song. I don't think it's the greatest song of all time. I don't think it's the greatest rock song of all time, but it's the one that people think of as that is the great, like, if you're thinking of the great heavy rock song from in what we call classic rock, the great heavy classic rock song is Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah, I would agree with you that that is sort of the summary conclusion of all music literature to date. That's sort of like, yeah, it's not really disputed that that is sort of the number one classic rock song.
Right.
Okay, I'll just go my number three, Bee Gees, Stayin' Alive.
Ah, there it is.
Stayin' Alive.
You gotta have the white tuxedo or white suit, then do the fingers, the dance up in the air, like the disco dance.
Yeah, we're doing that dance right now, just can't tell.
Okay, my number two is, I'm just gonna say it. It's American Pie by Don McLean. And it's... See, he doesn't check the marks of being by a beloved, well-known artist. People just know Don McLean as the American Pie guy. Some people will say, well, he also had another small hit in Vincent about the starry, starry nights. Paint those shadows blue and gray.
I don't think I know it.
See, it was... Exactly. You don't know it. It was a minor hit at the time. And it's not like he was a one-hit wonder. So he was a one enormous hit wonder and then one very tiny hit wonder. But... we do have my dad has the record, Don McLean's Greatest Hits, which I believe has two versions of American Pie on it. That makes me think of Real Big Fish's Greatest Hits album. Do you remember what that's called?
No.
Greatest Hit and More, because they had one chart hit.
So. Oh, yeah.
Anyways, not to diverge too much. But, I mean, American Pie is one of those touchstones that... it's kind of weird because there aren't really too many iconic songs like it. There are some things that have carried over in a smaller amount, but it's just this weird anomaly. It's got the melody, it's got the emotional lyrics, it's got the retrospective. To me, if you're kind of looking at it as representing something culturally, it's this end of innocence that came with the end of the 60s and this going into the 70s. 70s, I mean, American Pie is the end of that. That summer of love, that innocence, and it kind of emblemizes that the day the music died. You know, it's just got this sadness about loss about it, and that's one of the reasons it's a delightful is not the right word, but it's a moving and engaging listen every time.
It has a lot of verses, and there are a lot of people who know all of them.
I know, like, probably more than any other 7-minute song.
Yeah.
How many times have the lyrics of American Pie been sung at a campfire?
And that's a 7-minute song in the radio edit where they cut out a lengthy guitar solo.
Really?
Or maybe it's 7 minutes with the solo. Either way.
Something, yeah.
In any case, I'm really glad you had that on your list, because in putting this list together over the last week, I'm sorry, it's 7 decades. I did this in 7 days. And that one completely slipped my mind, and it should be on the list.
Okay.
So I'm sheepish that I did not include that
song. That's okay.
But that said, my number two is my other Beatles song, John Lennon's Imagine.
I thought about Imagine. Good choice. So what about Imagine?
Imagine represents such a beautiful idea. And in a time when Americans were so worried about war and so afraid of politics and all sorts of craziness going on across the United States, it's a song of hope and peace and coming together and joy and thinking about a brighter future. And it doesn't worry about the details of how we're going to get there. It just says, look, guys, there is still hope we can all cling to together, and it has lasted to this day.
Yeah. I mean, as you were talking about this, I was like, how the hell did I leave Imagine off my list? And that's just what the 70s were. It was just so much greatness built into its music. I mean, it's to me, it's the best decade for music ever. So I mean, of this paradigm of music, of course. But, yeah, I mean, it's not on my top five, because I've already spilled what my number one is, but it's worthy. I think you hit the points, and it's... I think there's something beautiful about it being, like, this guy who used to be in the Beatles, too. It's like this kind of... things are being fractured, and kind of like what I was talking about with American Pie, and, like, he was about rebuilding it, and I think it's a worthy pick, so. Mm-hmm. My number one is Bohemian Rhapsody, because it's just... when I think of what is an iconic song, it's a song that everyone anywhere can sing and, like, get into it, and that's what Bohemian Rhapsody is. I mean... you can listen to it, you can sing it, everyone knows it, you can make jokes about it, you can quote a line, and everybody's like, oh, yeah, I get that, I know what that line, I understood that reference. And it's, to me, it's, I used to think it was a hair too cheesy or something, I don't know what the right word is, a hair too something to be truly a great iconic song, but it just endures, it just, everyone knows it, and it's just so great, and I know you love it. You mentioned at one point on Earn This that you loved it. And of course you mentioned it today, so you respect it. But to me, that's one of the iconic songs.
Yeah.
Of the rock era.
That song blows my mind every time. And my number one, I think, also kind of gave away Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven.
Oh, so yours was on there too. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I think we both kind of kept those in our pockets, but for me. I said in the intro that that Smells Like Teen Spirit is the universal number one song of the 90s. I'm confident that Stairway to Heaven is the universal number one song of the 70s, and I find no reason to disagree, as tight as the decade is. And as much incredible music as there was in that decade, I'm impressed that my top five and your top five overlapped three songs.
Yeah, that is pretty impressive.
And I mean, one of those was the Bee Gees.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, you could have put it at number one for me. I mean, like I said, this decade is so loaded, and there's so many things you can make a case for it being number one for one reason or another. Let It Be is a little bit of a relic of the 60s. I think of it more because the Beatles were the 60s. But to me, it's any of those five could be the song of the 70s. But my two favorite songs from the 70s... that are iconic but not iconic enough to make my top five are You're the One That I Want from Grease and Hot Stuff by Donna Summer, which is my favorite disco song.
Okay,
disco,
sure.
Slash, it's got rock in it too. But
and when you're looking at amazing songs from the 70s, it's really easy to almost throw disco in the garbage can because it's not like it. I mean, Stairway to Heaven and Bohemian Rhapsody, relative to disco, take themselves seriously.
Yeah. No, disco, we should do a podcast about disco sometime, because disco is hugely fascinating, because it was very crapped upon during its time by critics and, like, the public, but it's proven hugely influential and actually kind of lasting. Like, disco is, like, it was kind of seen as a fad, but people still know disco songs. Not, like, the deep cuts, necessarily, but, like, if you ask someone to name their top five disco songs, like, or name five disco songs, they still could.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. And not to go on too long, but the disco was so ubiquitous in the 70s and permeated culture so deeply. My parents once, when they found out that I was into prog rock, gave me, I think the album was I, Robot by Alan Parsons Project. And they were like, look, this is crazy prog rock from the 70s. And I listened to it and I was like, do you hear the drums on this? This is all disco music. And it wasn't thought of that way at the time, because that's what everything sounded like. It was,
yeah.
Just, anyway.
Interesting.
All right, we'll jump to the 80s.
80s.
My number five iconic song from 1980s. Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle.
My number five is a Guns N' Roses song, but it's a different one.
Oh, well, you chose wrong.
Oh, okay. Sweet Child of Mine was my number five.
Yeah, that's fair. Guns N' Roses... clearly iconic of hair metal.
Yeah.
We're not going to put a Whitesnake song on our top five.
Although I think I like... what's that Whitesnake song that everyone knows? Here I Go Again.
Oh, sure,
I was going to put Here I... I mean, I think I like Here I Go Again more than I like any Guns N' Roses song, possibly.
Again, you're wrong.
But go on.
I mean, I saw there was a page on the internet recently that showed vocal ranges of a lot of famous performing artists, and the widest recorded vocal range of any male who had chart-topping hits was Axl Rose. And all these songs just showcase it. It's insane what he can do, and they put it to such good use, and they make really dynamic and creative and compositionally interesting songs in a hair metal context, and they're screaming about, "You're in the jungle! You're gonna die!" And yeah. Slash is just ripping on... Oh my gosh.
No, I was being a little bit facetious about Whitesnake. I mean, I love that song, but, I mean, another thing that was great about Guns N' Roses is they not only did all the interesting stuff you said, but they blazed the trail, too. I mean, they were kind of like the moment when... I mean, you're the thing that you opened this podcast with, What is an Iconic Song? To me, Guns N' Roses, maybe that one album. What's the name of that album?
Spaghetti something?
No, the one before that.
Oh, the one before that. Appetite for Destruction?
Yeah, that was the the time when it came out, when metal came out. I mean, like, became a serious thing. And, yeah, I mean, Sweet Child of Mine, I picked for similar reasons. So, to me, the riff in Sweet Child of Mine is, it's not quite as metal as Welcome to the Jungle, but I think the riff more people know on Sweet Child of Mine.
Of course, back then, they called metal hard rock. Anyway, this is a great segue from heavy metal to my number four pick for the decade, Cyndi Lauper's Girls Just Wanna Have Fun.
I thought about that. It didn't make my five, but... Okay, so what about this song is iconic?
It's one of these things. When I was going through each decade, I thought about what was the most iconic song sung by a woman. Mm-hmm. Because, frankly, most of the list is sung by men. Mm-hmm. And for me, this one really just stood out. It's memorable. Cyndi Lauper made a whole career off of it. People know and love her. She was an icon for women in the decade and in decades following.
Yeah, if you're going to make a comprehensive list of iconic songs, then you're going to just to wanna include a woman on that list. So, good choice on that. And I also think that's one of those songs that its style is so, I don't know what the right word is, not harsh, but not abrasive, but like the whole kind of high-pitched, not whininess of Cyndi Lauper's voice, but femininity of it is like, I think... well, at least when I was in high school, I'm a guy, so like, to me, that was like a song that you listened to and enjoyed ironically. But I think it is a truly great song and an iconic song too.
Yeah.
My number four is "When Doves Cry" by Prince.
Okay.
Prince is a little bit of an enigma for me, but to me, this when I think of like the '80s kind of rich. Electrical sound. I'm not describing that very, very clearly, but when I think of the '80s sound, and do you know what I mean when I say the synthesized '80s sound?
Absolutely, and it's not just synthesizers. It maybe someone out there will know what I'm talking about, but when I think of '80s music, there's this sound I don't know if it's a snare drum or a tom, but some drum being hit like in an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And that drum is in every 80s song. Every single song.
I know
song
the sound, too.
Yeah.
And 80s music just had a density to it. I mean, the pop had a density to it. To me, that was the greatest of it. It was an enormous hit. It was by the superstar. It hit a lot of the check marks. And it's a song that... I didn't very much like the first couple times I heard it, but it's really grown on me. So I think it's one of those songs that is kind of really iconic of the era, and is one that I've increasingly respected as its own song rather than just an emblem of its era. So
when people know you by one name, and when you even take away that name and replace it with a symbol, and people keep buying your music non-ironically, you are an icon.
I think so.
My number three song. Laugh if you want. Band Aid, Do They Know It's Christmas?
Oh, that's a controversial pick and an unorthodox pick, I'll say. But I buy it. So let's hear you stick up for it.
Okay, so there was this, and it's sort of iconic of a genre because there was another one, right? There was let's see. This is Do They Know It's Christmas. The other one was.
Were you thinking of songs where everyone got together to raise
money?
Yeah.
What was the other big '80s one?
Well, We Are the World.
That's what I'm going for.
Okay.
And I mean, it has each one of these songs has so many iconic people taking like one line in it. The song sold a bajillion copies because it was for charity, and it was heard around the world, and it's in the record books, and people remember it to this day.
Yeah, you gotta scratch Sweet Child of Mine as my number five and put We Are the World at number five. I forgot about We Are the World. That's a, yeah. Well, you had the Band-Aid one, but...
Either way.
I mean, yeah, it's... And it also is like this this era of excess to me, too. Like, everyone singing in a line, like all of these... if we have all these superstars together, it's gonna be the greatest song ever, and everyone's gonna buy it. Like... To me, that's a very 80s thing, and it just, it's yeah, good choice.
All right.
My number three is possibly my favorite song from the 80s. Probably second or third favorite song from the 80s, Every Breath You Take by The Police. It's a fantastic ballad, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous, it's, but it's also, It's just this great thing that people kind of got around, and like kind of the whole new wave and some of that stuff that was going on in the 80s. This is when the Police kind of transcended that and like turned it all into this one beautiful, lasting pop song.
You know, it's a great song. I would not have put it on my most iconic list. I guess for two reasons. One, the Police have a sound that I find to be fairly unique in the decade.
And that doesn't really have it.
And that song doesn't really have it, which is in the sense of this list, a saving grace. But the other thing is, the song is about stalking.
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah, it's... I'm not disputing that in the slightest. It's the stalker song. But, I mean, that doesn't very much diminish my... No more than it diminished my enjoyment of it. No more than "Here's to the Night" is diminished by its lyrics in my mind. Obviously, a different thing, but
yeah, I don't know if it goes against one of the 10 steps in your recipe. Just that it's the lyrics aren't something that you can safely explain to your children.
Yeah,
from the band that brought you "Don't Stand So Close to Me."
Yeah, that's true. I think it also is like. Maybe it's just over the line, but it's close enough to the line that you can be like, oh, just really loves it, and this is the way that he's saying that he loves it. Like, that's saying, yeah, this person is stalking this other person, and this is not okay. Like, it's true. When we get to the 2010s, I'm going to talk about a song whose lyrics, because of being over the line, have, I think, will diminish its long-term enjoyability. And I think you can make a case for that for Every Breath You Take.
Anyway, no debate for me that it's a good song. My number two for the 1980s is my Michael Jackson pick, and I went with Billie Jean. I think that when you're talking about the 1980s, I think Michael Jackson is critical to have on this list. I hope he's still coming from you. And I think Thriller is probably everyone's favorite, and maybe that's what I should have put on. I think I had a reason for including Billie Jean over Thriller, but at this moment I can't remember and probably should have just gone with that one.
To me, Billie Jean is by far the most iconic song of the 80s. I have it at number one.
Okay, good.
And to me, that and Smells Like Teen Spirit rock their decade. Those are the two songs that rock their decade. So, no disagreement here. It's the most Michael Jackson song. Now, when you say Thriller, I hadn't really thought much about the video element until you just thought of that now.
And Thriller is a title track, too, which
I actually, it's not my favorite song on Thriller.
No, I think Billie Jean is a better song.
I think Billie Jean is a fantastic song. And I don't even think Thriller is the second best song on Thriller. To me, the two iconic, most iconic songs from that. But now, see, I guess it's a three, there are three of them, because Thriller with the video has to be up there, and the title. But it's Beat It is the other one.
Yeah, and Beat It and Billie Jean both typify his sound, which is probably why Billie Jean should win.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, and then Billie Jean also has some of the thing with the 80s when the certain paranoia to it. And I kind of think that makes me think of the 80s as like a slightly more like paranoid, tense era than the 70s and the 60s. And I mean, it's kind of 60s was the summer of love. 70s was the loss of innocence, and 80s is the aftermath of that, is people are like kind of paranoid and isolated. And I know it's too broad of strokes to capture decades with just these things, but like when I think of that decade and think of the many of the things that came out of it, like the feel of Billie Jean is the feel of the 80s to me.
Yeah.
So that was my number one, but I didn't tell you my number two, but I did tell you my number two already, because my number two is Don't Stop Believin'. I definitely don't think it's the second greatest song of the decade. I think it's the worst of the five songs that I mentioned, except maybe Sweet Child of Mine. And if I included We Are the World, I think that Don't Stop Believin' is a better song than We Are the World. But Don't Stop Believin' has like become the definition of like 80s cheese to me. And there's a lot of cheese in the 80s, and to me, just Don't Stop Believin' is like the kernel of that. Like that's it. It captures all of it. It's all there.
Okay, so there's a lot of cultural reference wrapped up in that, and how
that
we think
too.
About it.
Yeah.
Because I was gonna say, for that kind of song, I would prefer, say, More Than a Feeling by Boston.
Okay, you know, I can buy that. Yeah,
but it's not as as roundly either beloved or mocked as
exactly the
Journey.
Beloved. It's both beloved and mocked, and so you could say, well, it's mocked. Is it really iconic? Because remember, four distinctive excellence is part of my definition. So you can make a case that that's not the right choice for number two, but it's as an icon of the 80s. It has to be number two for me, so...
Sure. My number one song from the 1980s has not been mentioned yet at all, so maybe this will be a surprise, but I went for the song that, to me, sounds the most like an 80s song. When you hear things like this, it just sounds like an 80s song. Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, okay.
Not only is it the iconic sound of all 1980s music, like, wrapped up into one tight little song, it also is tightly associated with the movie franchise that is the 1980s in Rocky, and it's just too much to me an embodiment of the decade. Even if it's not good, it is everything like in its finest form all at once.
Yeah, I think you and me have Don't Stop Believin' and Eye of the Tiger for similar reasons. I think Eye of the Tiger is a good song. I don't know if it's to me, it's not the most iconic of the 80s, but you make some good points. I mean, the movie thing, yeah, that's definitely a thing, and it definitely has the 80s sound to it, so yeah. I can respect that. It's cheesy a little bit, not quite as cheesy as Don't Stop Believin', but it has that cheesiness to it. Do you dispute that?
It's definitely a little bit cheesy. I think that a lot of people are laughing when they're singing it.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. Well, that wraps up our top fives for the 80s.
Yeah, we already know you're number one, and I don't think either one of us is going to claim that the 80s have bested the 70s.
80s are the weakest, with the possible exception of the 50s, just because the 50s lack the quantity. The 80s are the weakest decade of music for me.
Okay, I'm not going to agree with that quite yet, but we'll see when we get to the end.
Okay, we'll see. We actually already hit the hour mark, so I think we're going to have to split this into two parts.
All right.
So this has been a good, fruitful discussion so far, and I guess we'll hit the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and then maybe some of our bonus topics we've been saving up in part two of this Earn This podcast.